Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Plant Based Podcast, or is it Tongue Twister? I'm here with Dr. Dylan Cutler. Hey Dylan, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
So for those who are listening, Dr. Dylan is a PCOS and woman hormonal health specialist. And the reason why I wanted to chat to her is because, of course, I'm a male, but I work with a lot of women. And although I can understand some of the information out there, I'd never experience it, so I thought it'd be good for myself to upskill, but also for you guys listening to get a more professional opinion on things that probably are on your mind a lot more than they are for me. So Dylan, thank you for being here. Before we get into, I guess, the questions that I'm dying to ask, maybe just introduce yourself, why you're plant-based, and I guess what led you to where you are today?
Sure, yeah. So, as you mentioned, my name is Dylan Cutler, and I've been plant-based for almost 8 years now. And I was a vegetarian before that, so that I've been a vegetarian for 15 years now. And that started from a lot of gut issues. I had IBS and suffered from constipation, bloating, just a lot of discomfort every time I ate, and particularly after dinner. And so this was as like a young child, a young teenager, and I determined myself that it was the red meat and chicken, two items that seemed to really set off my IBS symptoms. And so I told my parents one day that I didn't want to eat those anymore. And then sure enough, I had a lot more comfort with after dinner, and I wasn't in this like debilitating pain that would like put me down on the couch the whole night, or I would just, you know, sometimes collapse from how painful my stomach hurt. So that was a huge factor in going vegetarian. And then my transition to veganism was more related to my diagnosis of PCOS, which puts women at greater risk of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And I found that both of those long-term conditions could be prevented through a plant-based diet. So that's when I decided I'll give it a try. It seemed like the best option for my long-term health. And this was based on research from 7 or 8 years ago. And now I would say our research is even points more strongly in that direction. I made that transition. Would have been my final year of college, and have never looked back. I really enjoy the abundance of a plant-based lifestyle. I enjoy the flexibility of not restricting calories, which was a problem for a long time. And I can eat until I'm full, and it's all very nutritious food.
Sounds good. So I think what is important for people to understand is that you have got PCOS yourself. So it's mm-hmm. not like you're a professional in this field and you're telling people something that you don't understand. Like, you understand it, you've lived it. And then of course, you know, you're an advisor on other people and that thing. Is that why you decided to specialize in PCOS? Because it was something that you had, and you just basically, you know, probably went through a journey yourself of how can I be the healthiest with PCOS, and you just felt like you wanted to share that with others?
I think it was partly my experience, but more so I saw how common my experience was in other people. And I had women in my family very close to me that were also suffering from PCOS. So I think it was more so the pain and suffering that I saw other women and PCOS fighters going through that pushed me into that direction.
Yeah, because I deal with a lot of ladies with PCOS as well, and I didn't realize how common it was. What the frequency of it is in women? How often?
Yeah, so it's a really tricky statistic, and you've probably seen a lot of different stats reported. I say up to 18%, sometimes 20%, based on literature. And the reason it's so difficult for us to really get a number down is that there's a lot of misdiagnoses going on around the world, and physicians using different diagnostic criteria. So we don't have a true standard to compare everyone to. So that's where we don't really know how, you know, how frequent or how true PCOS is. Yeah.
Okay. So if someone asked you, what is PCOS, how would you define it to them?
Mm-hmm. So it's a reproductive metabolic endocrine disorder that, you know, affects up to 18 to 20% of women all over the world. It doesn't discriminate. And it's really comes down to an increase of androgens, also known as testosterone, as well as often frequently with insulin resistance. So sometimes there may be PCO on ultrasound, which means that there are small cysts in the ovary that are actually follicles. They're not cysts, but they're called cysts, and that's where the PCOS name comes from. So that may occur, but it doesn't have to be there for a woman to have PCOS.
Yeah, and is there more than one type of PCOS? I know that some of it does occur with insulin resistance, and sometimes it doesn't. What kind of determines if insulin resistance is present, and is there other variations of the same kind of condition?
Yeah, so there's a whole spectrum based on the fact that it is a syndrome, so you can have some symptoms and not others. From my medical training, there's four types of PCOS, and this is based on it, whether you'd have like two or of the three symptoms or all three. Okay. So it's a little confusing, but classic PCOS would be where all three symptoms are present, and usually this is the most severe form, and where insulin resistance and hyperandrogenism are going to be typically at the worst, as well as hyperandrogenic PCOS. So when I'm talking about these, a woman would have likely irregular cycles or no cycles at all. The second criteria would be hyperandrogenism, which would be an increase of testosterone or other androgens, or they might have a physical appearance of increased androgens, which can look like excess facial hair or body hair and other places of their body. And then the third criteria is having the excess follicles on the ovary. Okay. So if you have all three of those, then that's classic, and that's typically where we see the insulin resistance, as well as if you have the hyperandrogenic phenotype.
Okay. And is there like a specific cause of PCOS? Is there things that you can do to reduce the chance of you having it? Is it genetic? Is it lifestyle? What is going on there?
Mm-hmm. So we don't know the cause, which is one of the most frustrating parts as a researcher and as a healthcare provider, because it's really tough to treat something that we don't know what's causing it. So there's probably, you know, 8 to 10 theories on how PCOS began. One is an exposure to androgens in utero. So actually when, for example, when I was in my mother's womb, I may have been exposed to an increase of androgens, and that has created like an excess of androgens in myself now later as a grown woman. So that's one like of the leading causes, and that's, you know, not necessarily preventable. It could have been and so many things that would have happened when I was in the womb, and not necessarily highly traumatic, just, you know, like a healthy pregnancy could still cause that. So as far as prevention, you know, the best we can do is as a healthy lifestyle, and it might not be good enough to prevent. It may happen anyways, but I say that a healthy lifestyle is going to prevent many conditions, and it's going to be the best we can do for our health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you talked about what you do. What is your day-to-day? Are you with patients? Are you researching? Are you doing a bit of both? What is kind of your day-to-day 9-to-5, day look like?
Yeah, so I'm a holistic health coach. or wellness coach for women. So I coach with clients mostly online so that I can have, or they can have access to me from wherever they are in the world. And I discuss and lead them on how to change their lifestyle to better manage PCOS. So this can be through nutrition, exercise, mindfulness, supplementation, just very, very simple steps, but in the long term, they can be really effective. So that's okay. Part of what I do. The other part is content writing. So whether it's blog work or on Instagram, social media, really getting free information out there, because that's really important to me, as I see a lot of information or misinformation on the web and on social mm-hmm. media. And I really try to dig through that and get to the science and let people know, you know, what has been researched and, you know, maybe what there's less research on and what we like what's absolutely false at this point.
Yeah. Okay. What are some of the most, I guess, false things that you do commonly see?
Well, in the realm of PCOS, definitely a low carb or keto diet is the most popular push diet right now for women with PCOS. And we really, we don't have long-term evidence on the safety of a keto diet. Mm-hmm. And nor do we have, nor do we know if it's more effective, not just for weight loss, but for overall wellness. So if someone wants to lose weight, an effective diet is not one that loses weight for me. It's also one that means they're going to be able to sustain this their whole life, because it needs to be sustainable. No one wants to just like drop 20 pounds and then have it come back. Exactly. I don't think that is anyone's goal. So it has to be sustainable, and it also has to be healthy for our insides. So we can lose weight on the outside and still have a lot of issues in our blood work. We could lose our periods because of severe weight loss or a keto diet. And, periods are a factor of health.
Very important factor, I assume.
Yes, a very important factor. And it goes beyond fertility. Usually we only care about it when we're trying to get pregnant, but really it's if we're not, producing the balanced level of hormones that our body needs, it's going to affect our mood. It's going to affect our energy, sexual desire. Like there's so many things that will be affected if we're not having regular periods.
So do you think that the low carb kind of keto diet is popular for treating PCOS because of maybe the insulin resistance factor? So obviously we see that, all diabetics are told to go on a low carb diet because it doesn't spike your insulin, which we now mm-hmm. obviously know that that's not really treating anything. That's just avoiding that pathway. And if you gave a carbohydrate to someone on a keto diet that had insulin resistance, they would still have that spike. So it's not really treating the symptom. It's just avoiding it. And that's why, if we talk more about the diabetes side of things, which mm-hmm. I think people can probably just listen to my other podcast, which I did with Mastering Diabetes and other people. But, it's pretty clear that for someone with diabetes type 2 or insulin resistance, a whole food plant-based diet is going to treat the reason why they're having insulin resistance. Do you think that the whole low-carb keto thing is popular for PCOS because it's, an uneducated approach to kind of getting rid of the insulin resistance? And if they lose weight, then of course they're going to see better symptoms and mm-hmm. body markers come down. Is that the reason why you think it is, or is it actually misguided science out there that people are kind of being told?
No, I think you're absolutely right. It definitely is the insulin glucose factor, and how diabetes, I would say, used to be more commonly treated with a low carb diet. But as you mentioned, with the Mastering Diabetes team, I follow the work they do really closely, and am always really impressed by the results that they get with a plant-based diet. And that's where I see the true benefit and results happening with women, is a plant-based diet, for the same reasons. It's going to target the insulin resistance and possibly prevent diabetes down the road. But you're definitely right there.
So if someone came to you and they had PCOS, would you treat them differently based on their different kind of PCOS that they had? Because you mentioned those ones earlier. Is it the same one size fits all, or is it kind of like you need to pay attention to certain factors when they get treated for it?
It's definitely individualized, especially because they come to me with different concerns. Someone may be really concerned about their acne or facial hair, which would be, sorry, I'll just leave the sign.
Yeah, sorry, I do live on the high street and
no worries.
It's quite busy. It's Friday night here in London, so it's kind of like, the sirens going past.
Lucky you working on a Friday night.
Well, I say Friday night, it's actually like 10 to 5 p.m., but because it's winter, it's very dark, very early.
Ah, yes. Yeah. I recall. It gets dark here too, early.
It's not that late. It's really dark. It feels like it's late.
So I was just saying that, yeah, so someone may come to me with acne and increased facial hair, and then that would be a high androgenic issue, whereas someone may have... maybe suffering to or experiencing trouble losing weight, no matter like how hard they try, they've tried everything, and insulin resistance may play a factor, or even cortisol, which is what I see a lot. If someone has increased cortisol or just a really stressful life or is not getting enough sleep, then that is something I'd be more focused on, like stress reduction, sleep hygiene, supplements to support the increase of cortisol. So that's, it is quite individualized, with the exception, I see a plant-based lifestyle being beneficial for all types. Yeah.
Okay. And do you have guidelines within that plant-based kind of diet that you would want people to kind of follow? Like, I know obviously with the insulin resistance side of things, you want to go for low fat. When I've kind of worked with people, like most people that I work with, they want to lose weight as well. So just kind of make sure that's the correct amount of food that they're getting, but also lots of high fiber and avoiding certain foods. So is that kind of the same thing? Like, do you prescribe just have a whole food plant-based diet, or do you just say whole food plant-based diet, but also be mindful of X, Y, and Z?
I start with a whole food plant-based diet. And again, it depends where they're coming from, and everyone has different, lifestyles that they're starting with, so it's going to be more challenging for some to make a huge change, like a huge jump to whole food plant-based. That might be a big jump for someone, so even reducing certain animal products and increasing fruits, vegetables, like high fiber foods, that would be like the first step, and then getting a little deeper into that after that's being managed, because change is hard. That's the most challenging thing for people, and that's also why I think having a coach can help, because there is a accountability factor and support there, especially if we don't get support from our family, etc., for being vegan or wanting to eat well. That's where the having a coach can be so great, effective.
Yeah, I think that's what I kind of say as well, is like having a coach that knows what they're doing holds you accountable, but also you're getting an individualized approach. Like, you can't just expect to download a PCOS meal plan from Google and expect that it's going to be easy for you to follow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not considering your starting point, and you need to kind of address the things, the low-hanging fruit, so to say. What things can you change that are easy to start off on a good path, make you feel better, be motivated to continue?
Right. So that really, like, the first consultation is really about, about them and where they're coming from, and what is their daily lifestyle like, their diet, what kind of factors are in there, maybe their work or their family that's causing a lot of stress, things that, as I said, a holistic approach to healthcare, maybe some things that their physicians have not gone over with them, but are actually really affecting their symptoms.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because I had a client in Australia that had PCOS. she went to a doctor. Her doctor told her to take, what is the supplement that people in PCOS usually take?
Myo-inositol?
Yeah.
Inositol?
Yeah. And there you go. Yeah. And then she basically was told, you know, or queried, does my diet have anything to do with this? And the doctor said no. Then she came and worked with me. She lost like 25 pounds, felt a lot better, went back to her doctor. Her doctor was like, that supplement must really be working. She was like, no, it's because I changed my diet and here's how. I didn't even touch the supplement. She's like, the doctor was like, wow, I should really think more about the nutrition side of things.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, physicians are so, they're just trying to help people as quickly as possible. And unfortunately, you know, they see patients in such small windows that they can't treat everything. So it's kind of like, it may be worth going privately or having, like you said, a coach and tackling it from a more individual nutrition lifestyle kind of approach.
Definitely.
I was just gonna say that the
nutritional education that physicians get in med school, at least I can speak for Canada and the US, is very minimal. I think, you know, it's like a few hours in their hundreds of hours of training. So for a physician to even to speak on nutrition is really, they're not, you know, prepared for those kind of conversations. So, and it's not fault of their own, our, you know, the training isn't there, but it can be really frustrating for patients who are seeing, you know, what should I eat? Everywhere we're seeing that like diet is important. You go online, it's this diet or this diet, and then the physician says, no, it's not really going to help you. And I've been there too. And I mean, I studied, my PhD was in nutrition for PCOS. So I came up with those kind of arguments a lot with physicians that kind of, you know, looked down on my research as not being as important as, say, a pharmaceutical intervention or finding a cure, which there likely is not a cure for PCOS. So,
yeah, for you guys, it's just all about reducing the symptoms and trying to reduce people's weight. Because obviously with PCOS, losing weight can be difficult. What guidelines would you have for people that are in that situation?
Yeah, so the first thing for me would be to not focus on the weight loss, which I know is easier said than done. But by focusing on the scale or, you know, it can be very stressful. And this is that's the opposite of what our hormones are going to be happy with if we are increasing our stress hormone, which is cortisol. Mm-hmm. So I try not to focus on any sort of numbers. Even I avoid calorie counting or macro counting. It's really about like what food feels good and then what your body feels like. So, are you energized by this workout or are you so fatigued that, you know, you're not going to do it again? So then it's probably not the best workout for you. It's going to need to be something that you enjoy. And then you're going to do it more. So it's really about like loving the lifestyle that, it's going to be changing some habits, sure, but nothing too painful. It shouldn't be, it should be an enjoyable process. And in that, the weight loss is merely a symptom of this enjoyable lifestyle that we've adapted.
Mm. And it's interesting you talked about doing a hard workout, because when you do stressful workouts, cortisol is also released, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of like counterintuitive in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. So over-exercising is another common factor for women. A lot of women, especially women with PCOS, again, as we push to lose weight, and I've been there getting in the gym, whether it's like 2 hours a day or every day, and it's too much for our hormones. We can't support that sort of activity, especially when we already have these contributing factors, as you said, like the spike of cortisol. So things like yoga even can be more more therapeutic and may actually support our symptoms better since it's supporting our stress hormones.
Is there a male equivalent of like overtraining? Do you, obviously men can overtrain, but is there like a male equivalent of like PCOS or something like that, a hormonal imbalance?
Yeah, so there actually, we've seen similar symptoms in brothers and uncles of women with PCOS. So it looks like metabolic syndrome, okay. You know, with an increased weight or trouble losing weight, high insulin, maybe high blood pressure. Yeah.
Okay, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So whenever I talk to people about PCOS, a few things come to mind. They obviously like told to do a low carb diet. They are also sometimes told to avoid soy. What is your take on soy?
Yes, that's another popular one. So there's actually research, several studies that shows that soy can be beneficial for women with PCOS. And this is quite counter to what many would say. And I think the belief is that, or the myth comes from the fact that we think that soy is estrogenic, but really it's a very weak phytoestrogen. And it's similar to how flax seeds are phytoestrogens. And these are very healthy for our hormones. So I don't avoid soy. Of course, everything is best in moderation, but it's still going to, it's a great source of protein. And then I just focus on the types of soy. So non-GMO, organic is important. And knowing, you know, where our food is coming from.
Yeah, and having it in its most whole form as possible. Mm-hmm. I think it is a very interesting, and I still don't understand why it's still a problem with soy, because people will say, I don't want to have soy, yet they still have dairy, which surely must have a bigger effect on their hormones than a phytoestrogen, which is almost a thousand times weaker.
It's dairy is made, you know, for baby cows to grow, so it's loaded with growth hormones, and that's the purpose. So of course it's going to be highly estrogenic.
So if someone had PCOS, or even just in general, would you give them guidelines of things to avoid? So let's say they said, I don't want to be vegan, I don't want to be on a plant-based diet, but what things should I really not do? What guidelines would you give for them?
Dairy, restricting dairy and is the number one, as far as diet, is what I would recommend. And gluten as well can be effective for some women, and not necessarily a huge shift, as there are a lot of alternatives, and a whole food plant-based diet doesn't have that much gluten naturally anyways. So those two, dairy and gluten, I see a lot of benefits from that.
Is it the processed gluten or is it whole food gluten as well that you would want to kind of avoid?
Yeah,
spoken to some gut doctors about gluten, and they say that the most, I guess, intolerances or symptoms they say are when they have gluten present, when it's like in a processed food, and if they gave it to somebody when it was still in its whole food form, like a cereal or wheat, it's people don't tend to have symptoms.
For sure, yeah. That's processed would be the preferable form of gluten to avoid. And then it's going to be individual as well, and how extreme, as it's an intolerance possibly. So we kind of have to test out ourselves. I'll have gluten here and there, not really paying attention to its form, whether it's processed or not, and then I may have symptoms, you know, the next few days, increased inflammation, et cetera. So it depends on the individual, and that's where, you know, trying to remove things, so then like keeping a diary and about how we're feeling and how we're doing after that can really help us get to the perfect, or not perfect, but like the accurate lifestyle for that individual.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. What about, I know I'm just firing all these questions at you.
Yes,
I was actually talking to one of my female clients today, and I was like, I'm doing this podcast. What questions can I ask her? the contraceptive pill for people that have got PCOS, but also just normal women, like, is that healthy long term to be taking?
I think it's important for women to know the risks of the pill and a more thorough look at what the pill is doing to our bodies. So there's more people speaking out about the negative impacts of the pill now than ever before. So that's great. Dr. Jolene Brighton is one of them that speaks very well about how the pill is really affecting women, not only our hormones, but even like the way we're behaving, what we're thinking. These are things that the doctors don't necessarily tell us about when we go on the pill. And yeah, it may fix some of the symptoms that we're dealing with, but it's not getting to the root cause of PCOS. So it's definitely not going to be healthy to stay on our whole life, nor do most people want to be on it their whole life. So yeah, it's really tricky, as there aren't very many contraceptive options out there. And so it's a very tricky area, but I try to avoid, going to that option, until it's the last possible resort.
Because I think, like, for my girlfriend, she used to take the pill, and when she did, didn't matter which one it was, there'd always be negative side effects, acne, mood swings, I think even weight gain. So it's one of those things that if you're having those side effects, then it probably means you shouldn't be having it, right?
Yeah, and even after going off of it, so there's a recent study that showed that when girls were on the pill as teenagers, they are more likely to develop depression later in life. So that's a pretty marked finding. Well, it was an association that was found. It points to the fact that we need to be more informed before putting especially young girls on the pill. As I was put on the pill when I was 17 for PCOS, and okay. Didn't think twice about it. It just seemed like this is what's going to help my symptoms. And I ended up switching between four different pills because they all had awful side effects. I think the worst I remember was about a 40-pound weight gain. And I was a high level athlete at the time. So I was training a lot, and it didn't make sense, this weight gain, right? And then the doctors even said, the pill doesn't, it doesn't make you gain weight. It's maybe you're eating more. And so that was very, caused a lot of shame and guilt for myself. And then I ended up, going off that and losing the weight. And yeah, so I wish that we had more options for women when it comes to contraception, and of course for treating PCOS as well. There aren't any solid options right now, and we need more research, and we need more funding, and potentially a male contraceptive would be helpful as well.
I wonder what effect that would have on men if they were given things. It could work. If it works, it's almost like the behavioral side of things, though. Would that work? Because we would have to take it. And in a way, it's almost the woman that would have to bear the burden if he didn't take it. So it's kind of like, I guess that's a very hot social kind of topic. With other hormonal issues, do you kind of see quite common ones, things like endometriosis? Like, have you got any experience with that? And maybe you can give some guidelines on women that are struggling with that.
Yeah, so those are commonly... endometriosis is commonly confused with PCOS, and the biggest difference is that there's probably going to be a lot more pain with endometriosis, pain and perhaps heavy bleeding. So they're quite different and unrelated. As far as diet, I've seen a few studies where a plant-based anti-inflammatory diet can be effective for endometriosis as well. So that's like I said, across the board, I think that a plant-based lifestyle is only going to potentially improve whatever sort of health condition we have, and before doing any harm, which is my number one thing, is to just do no harm with anything I'm suggesting.
And I think it's important to note that when you say a plant-based diet, it is still one that is high in variety, well planned, and kind of including everything. It's not just cutting out animal products and replacing it with crap, even just replacing it with one food. Like you can't just eat rice and potatoes and think that you're going to be healthy. So, I mean, people probably know the guidelines that I give advice to because they've listened to me on podcasts and seen Instagram. But what is your kind of key elements of a healthy plant-based
Yeah, so
diet?
lots of colors. I'd rather count colors than calories.
It's a
So
good saying. Could
yeah,
hashtag that.
I'll post that. So eating the rainbow, it truly has a lot of health benefits, as colors in food actually are denoting different nutrients of the food. So whether we're getting like orange sweet potatoes or lots of greens, that's like number one. Everyone should be, eating greens a few times a day, whether it's like spinach or kale, or there's lots of ways that we can get our greens. So colors are number one. Definitely eating enough. That would be the number one issue I would see with going vegan or plant-based, is that people just don't consume enough of these the whole foods that they can eat now. So they end up hungry or tired, or perhaps that is when some deficiencies may occur. And so that's why my number one thing is, if someone is like experiencing fatigue, etc., then I would say, like, well, maybe eating more, which may be counterintuitive to someone that is trying to lose weight, but that may actually swing us in the right direction as far as metabolism and getting our systems working optimally again.
Okay, and what about in terms of nut butters, oils, seeds? What's your kind of take on those?
Again, it's going to be based on the individual and what sort of that diet they're used to, or what their, how their cholesterol is, etc. Because I don't necessarily think that oils and fats are bad for us, especially if someone has been restricting fat for a long time, because we do need a certain amount of fat for our organs to function properly. And this was a problem for me. I restricted fat in my dieting bulimia days. I really, sorry, I didn't consume much fat at all. And I wasn't getting periods. I suffered from IBS. It probably had to do with some more cosmetic issues, if you can call them issues, but like whether our hair is shiny or skin is healthy, like fats are really important. So I just suggest more fats from whole foods like avocados, nuts, seeds, as opposed to fats from oils, which are processed and already degraded.
And that has just reminded me that I have had conversations quite a few times with women that try and cycle their hormones with different amounts of seeds and nuts. So have I got that right? Is that what they're trying to
Yeah,
do?
seed
Yeah.
cycling, yeah.
How is that? Is that actually a thing? Is it, I mean, it sounds really hard to actually implement, but is there a benefit of that?
So that's another debate. I'm sure I'll be debated on this, but there isn't any research that I know of that supports seed cycling at the moment. I think it's perfectly healthy to eat all those seeds at any time in the month, and yeah, that's
And that's
it's getting
it.
very, yeah.
Yeah, so essentially what women are trying to do is having different kinds of seeds based on different times of their menstrual cycle, because different hormones are dominant, and therefore they should be having different seeds in the hope that that is going to balance out the hormones, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I think that it speaks to a larger issue of being very being very regimented and maybe exact about certain things, but then maybe overlooking an other overall lifestyle. Like if someone is truly eating, you know, a whole foods, plant-based lifestyle, and has low levels or like reasonable levels of stress, exercise that works for them, and sleep schedule that works for them, and feels, you know, energized, then, and still is having some issues, then that is when, you know, those kind of tweaks may have a benefit. But to do that before we've looked at all these other factors that I'm going to say are more influential than like a small amount of seed, I think that speaks to a bigger issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what we as humans like to do. We focus on the small little things rather on the big thing, because it just suits our lifestyle better. It's like, oh, it must be because I'm not getting enough seeds. It's like, hold on, maybe you're just eating too much food and the wrong kind of food, or going out and drinking too much.
Yeah, yeah. It seems simple enough, right? So why don't you try it? Maybe it's the fix, and we all want something that would be pretty simple. But yeah, drinking's another thing. Who we have in our lives, what kind of like people we're surrounding ourselves with. There's so many factors that are is truly affecting our well-being, but that is a lot harder to look at ourselves and you know, start working on those areas.
I think that's probably why a lot of the population don't want to go vegan, because although they might have their beliefs of, you know, animal cruelty, the environment, but then they have to actually put aside their conveniences, because at the moment we don't live in a vegan world. Like, oh yeah, but that means I can't have some of my favorite foods at the moment. I'm like, well, you need to think about the bigger picture.
Definitely. But
that is a completely different topic. Hopefully,
yeah,
more people, I guess it's just one of those things, is like, think about the long-term reward that you're going to get rather than just that chocolate bar or that meal or whatever.
Or other alternatives. Like I make a lot of recipes that are veganized, as I say, and they are delicious. And so you can have the cheesecake or the fudge. I've just made recently a lavender fudge that was basically cacao, some coconut oil, some maple syrup. So it's still, you know, a treat, but it's perfectly, you know, it's perfectly vegan and is a part of a whole foods, like healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know where you're in Toronto, right? Is it quite easy to be vegan there?
I'm actually Vancouver.
Sorry. Yeah, it's like calling me Australian.
Yeah, Toronto. so it is, yes, I'm very lucky. There are tons of vegan restaurants here in Vancouver. And I think as a province, there's probably more vegans and vegetarians than other provinces in Canada. Mm-hmm. I think the West Coast is known for that. But so yeah, there's definitely more options. But having said that, I went vegan when I was living in upstate New York on a college campus, with 8 years ago, when there wasn't a Beyond Burger at the campus, dining hall, which I know there actually is now, which is pretty cool. But I was eating pretty plainly at the time. It was like getting canned beans, cooking my own rice or quinoa, whether it's vegetables. Like it was a college vegan diet, whether it's frozen vegetables, etc. So I've shifted a lot from then, but the idea is that it was very possible, even as you know, in a place that wasn't very catering to vegans.
Yeah, I think if you want it enough, if you've got a strong enough of a reason why, then you can make it work. Like fruits and vegetables, beans, grains, They're pretty much everywhere, available in most supermarkets. And then you just need to be quite creative with your garlic, your chili, ginger, whatever your favorite flavors are. And before you know it, boom, whole food plant-based diet without even knowing about it.
Absolutely, yeah. It is really the will. And I think a lot of documentaries out there were what shifted my opinion, especially on dairy, the dairy industry and cheese. And cheese was the thing I thought I couldn't give up. And I just loved snacking on all sorts of cheeses. And now I look at cheese and I just see a different story behind it. And I see how it will affect me directly, how it affected the animals that it came from, the environment. So it just paints a different picture that I don't think about the taste that I'm going to get from it.
Yeah, it's a very selfish thing just to put our taste before those other things. But hopefully everybody else gets it sooner or later. Before we say goodbye, I just wanted to ask about menopause. What are your, every woman I know is kind of worried they're going to put on weight when they go into menopause. What kind of, I guess, guidelines can you offer to kind of, I guess, decrease the risk of that or just to have a good time through the whole menopause process?
Yeah, I think potentially the fear of gaining weight in that time maybe the most harmful aspect, because it's not set in stone that is what's going to happen, and that with a staying true to a healthy lifestyle, we can still work with our hormones and find a lifestyle that's going to be best to maintain the weight that the woman wants to. So I think to remove the fear of the weight gain would be the number one suggestion that I would have. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, things like sleep become more important, lifestyle factors at that point, whether there's children involved or et cetera, there's going to be new stressors that are going to also impact our hormones. So getting on top of those. And then having a support network as well, because it isn't an easy time. So, other women that have gone through it or going through it is likely going to be super supportive for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I'm kind of getting from you is that not just for menopause, but PCOS and just general health is obviously go for a plant-based diet, but also look at reducing stress in all other areas of your life. And that's what's mm-hmm. going to be best for long-term health. Is that kind of like where you're kind of pointing towards?
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that involves really looking at where we get joy from, if we are getting enough joy in our lives. Sleep is huge. I think like sleep deprivation is just normalized now. And using caffeine to get that energy in the morning or to get the afternoon energy, I think we really have to, unfortunately, it's a hard thing to rewire in our society that's very like hustle based. But we can do it. We can shift our priorities and put ourselves first. The support network, I mentioned that because studies have shown that the support that we have in our lives is actually maybe the number one factor in health. So having, supportive people around us is much more beneficial than we think.
Yeah, I think if you look at like the Blue Zone groups, of course, they're having other aspects. But one of the big things is they have a good social circle and a reason to kind of wake up in the morning. And that comes from the people that they make happy, and in return, those people make mm-hmm. them happy. Just I keep thinking of these questions, caffeine and like you talk about sleep deprivation, how many hours of sleep should people be getting, and if they do have PCOS, should they actually be avoiding caffeine?
Yeah, so probably 7 to 9 would be most optimal, and some people can they can work around that, but it's a good starting point. And as far as caffeine, many women do experience increased anxiety with coffee, especially, so high levels of caffeine. And we can be more sensitive to that. So that's one factor. It can really also put our adrenals in overdrive if we have this chronic stress, and then we're on top of that, we're stressing our systems with caffeine. So that's where I try to suggest switching to alternatives like matcha tea is a really good alternative that won't give like the high a spike of energy and then dip. It's more of a continuous focused energy throughout the day. So I love matcha. So any kind of, again, it's going to be like, where are you starting from? How much coffee are you drinking? Can you reduce it? Can you find like alternatives? Even I use some mushroom adaptogen elixirs, which are great. Mm-hmm. So they're actually going to support our hormonal levels as opposed to caffeine, which will not.
Those are quite interesting, those mushroom drinks. They're quite quite new, and I think they're going to be a lot more popular in the future.
Yeah, I love that. It's becoming they're everywhere here in Vancouver, so I guess we're a little bit ahead of that curve.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I think that is everything for now. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. For people that like your voice and want to get to know you and see what you're about, how can they kind of get in touch?
Yeah, so my blog and Instagram is Fruitful Dish, and that's with a PH at the front of Fruitful. And I share lots of information there. I also, as I mentioned, I have my blog, which is fruitfuldish.com, and that would be the best place to find me. I've also started a Patreon where I give more detailed posts specifically on PCOS and women's hormonal health. So if you want to dig into the science a little deeper and also ask me some private questions, then my Patreon is a good way to do that.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, thank you so much for taking the time out. Just have a fantastic day saving the world.
Thank you. Yes. Enjoy your Friday night. It was a pleasure to speak with you today.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Plant-Based Podcast, formerly the Vegan Coach Podcast, but now I have rebranded and can be found at the_plant-based_coach on Instagram. So this is the place if you want to have some clarity, some education, and some confidence around planning a plant-based diet. Each week, I will have new episodes with guests ranging from friends, personal trainers, nutritionists, doctors, past clients, and with the goal of just helping you be a little bit healthier on your plant-based diet, answering the questions that you're probably thinking about, and giving you hopefully some entertainment and education along the way. If you enjoyed this episode or any others, please make sure that you listen to others and share them through social media so more people can be helped by this. Have a great listen, and I will see you on the other side.